Welcome to today's session on application integration futures, the roadmap, and what's next on Windows Azure. My name is Karthik Bharti, Senior Program Manager in the BizTalk team. And in today's session, in the next 60, 75 minutes or so, we'll be talking about BizTalk, what's in its roadmap, our investments in on-premises, in Azure, and hopefully we'll be able to land the session with a bunch of demos as well. Before I start, just a quick show of hands. How many of you have heard about, seen, or been part of the TechEd North America presentation with the same topic? Okay, that's a very small number. So that's good. So that helps me tailor the presentation. How many of you here are BizTalk users? Okay, you're the right audience. How many of you are using BizTalk Server 2010 in your premise today, in your premise partner, customers? Okay, that's a good handful. How many of you have heard about the service bus, EAI, and EDI? Okay, that's great. Okay, you guys are the right set of audience. So let's dive right into the presentation. The biggest key takeaway for today's presentation is that we are innovating in BizTalk, right? What it means is BizTalk Server will be released 6 months after Windows 8, right? Earlier, I think about a year ago, we shared our plans on the three broad pillars where we are investing BizTalk, the protocol and B2B and the improved Azure connectivity. To that, we have added a bunch of more features that we want to share today, but the commitment is we will be releasing BizTalk 6 months after Windows 8. Two, we are also saying that there is a commitment to release the server platform for years to come. This has been a question that has come up not just as part of our interactions, but more of from customers and other conferences when we went to and said, hey, what's the next roadmap after 2010 R2, right? And we are making a commitment that the server release is going to be there for years to come. Three, we are going to enable new Azure-based BizTalk scenarios for EAI and EDI. We'll talk about what it means in a minute. We'll go into the details of the set of features. Essentially, taking advantage of having integration scenarios in the cloud, either through a server form or in terms of a native PaaS form that we want to enable for both EAI and EDI. And we are also saying that we'll bring together BizTalk on-premises in Azure. It is important at the end of the day that the server story and the cloud story can work together, and there are possibilities of having a hybrid scenario, you know, where you message across on-premise and Azure. Finally, our ask is that you continue to bet on BizTalk, and we'll make sure that we take your investments forward. And the sideline is we have opened up our technology adoption program for CTP, and you can actually sign up right now and become part of the BizTalk 2010 R2 TAP program. Any of you in the audience who have already signed up for the TAP? Okay, so we'll share the URLs towards the end of the presentation so you can sign up for the CDP. Great. Okay, let's dive right in. So let's step back and see how BizTalk as a platform has progressed in the last few years, right? Many of you are familiar with BizTalk, this should be fairly familiar. I'll just breeze through through these slides. So at a high level, right, BizTalk is Microsoft's application/middleware strategy, right, connecting disparate applications when it comes to messaging. It has its own PubSub engine, the message box. It has a notion of orchestrations. You can define your business processes. You can define rules that you can use. You can do your analytics using BAM. And there are a bunch of adapters that we ship out of the box connecting to both line of business systems as well as transport adapters. And finally, we also support EDI integration, where if you want to do partner-to-partner integration with not just standard X12 Edify, but a bunch of accelerators, which are more industry-specific, be it healthcare or the financial sectors, right? And it's not that from BizTalk Server 2010, which was, I think, around August, September of 2010, till today, it's not that there have been no investments, right? If you actually look at the bottom three boxes, we have actually delivered what are called cumulative updates roughly every quarter. And if I'm not wrong, BizTalk Server 2010 had a cumulative update, a CU5 just released last week. And these cumulative updates are not just bug fixes, right? So we ensured that we added a whole bunch of DCRs. A good example is the HIPAA 5010 errata. You know, this is something that the HIPAA CMS mandates that that every company that tries to do transactions with them move to the most recent platform, messaging platform, and we ensured that we delivered that as part of the cumulative update. A bunch of enhancements even around admin console perf improvements, more UI, and even the Visual Studio fixes that were delivered as part of the CU. The interesting part is there was also a survey. This was actually done by a third-party vendor, and the survey was with about 650 participants who used not just BizTalk, but also the other competitive products, the Oracles of the world, the WebMethods of the world, TIBCO. So, and the survey actually showed that BizTalk was the most popular product across all these competitive products. And not just that, BizTalk Server 2010 was the most popular platform when it comes to comparing the 2010 versus the other versions of BizTalk itself. That's a huge change from where we were like 10 years ago to where we are now, and the popularity of BizTalk continues to grow. And what we also saw that out of that survey, 79% of the BizTalk users have already upgraded to the latest platform, that is 2010. Again, this could not have been done. You know, it's not a day's effort, right? So it's more of traditionally the server platform. We have invested in shipping a server release on a continuous basis every 2 to 3 years. Started off with BizTalk Server 2000, primarily a PubSub engine. Did a bunch of Xlang messaging. Over time, it grew to somewhere in BizTalk Server 2006 R to when we introduced a whole bunch of EDI features to where it is today as an RTM BizTalk Server 2010 platform, which has SFTP support, HIPAA, a bunch of new standards related to admin console, a bunch of mapper improvements, so on and so forth, right? And this is roughly with around 12,000 customers for BizTalk today. So that kind of shows the the maturity and as well as the broad user base for a server product like BizTalk. So we kind of look forward and see how do we take these investments forward, like the pivots around how does Azure play into the whole story, how is the platform story as a server platform story evolving. So let's first look at what customers were actually telling us, right? This is more for feedback that we heard from customers. One, keep me current with the platform, standards and LOB changes. This is a very fundamental ask if you think about it, right? At the end of the day, our customers and partners are going to use BizTalk not in isolation, but BizTalk itself comes with a bunch of requirements around SQL Server, around Office, Visual Studio. So, and you would also be using other Microsoft products, and at some point you want to make sure that when you move a platform to the latest version, you want to make sure BizTalk also works with that latest version, right? And LOB versions keep changing. Our partners could change it. So is there like an updated story available for connecting to these systems? What we also heard was reduce the time for developing integration solutions. At the end of the day, it is high touch, we agree, but ensure that I don't have to spend too much time in developing my app, deploying it. Is there, for example, quick applications, can I do a config-based application development? And when we get to the Azure side of things, I'll actually show a demo with just a few clicks. I would actually end up deploying a whole end-to-end EDI solution. Again, let the customer focus on the business challenges and not the technology infrastructure. You probably know better than this. You don't want to get into the details of saying, okay, now let me find out where exactly is my message stuck in the whole processing transmission. You're better off looking at a tracking view and saying, hey, this is where my message has been failed, and this is the reason. Now let me go take a business action on it, as opposed to just going figuring out what's the technical infrastructure change there, right? When it came to the cloud, we heard a bunch of feedback, both the bunch of advantages and the challenges that customer told us. Primarily, this feedback came from both ISVs and enterprises, right? The obvious advantage is with cloud, I get a scalable infrastructure, it is cost effective, and some scenarios like B2B, which is actually amenable to the cloud. Think of it when you're actually trying to talk to your partner who's outside of your firewall, who's outside of your org domain, you're actually crossing your domain. So in some sense, you could host that system as a cloud infrastructure and be able to talk to partners. And when it came to challenges, it was primarily around data privacy, isolation. Hey, would I give up more control? My data resides outside of my firewall. Is it secure? The other thing that we heard was in terms of LOB assets. LOB assets are always going to be on-premise. So really the ask was around, hey, is there a way that I can still use my cloud infrastructure and be able to connect to my LOBs on-premises? So what did we infer? So at the end of the day, the bottom line is there is no one-size-fits-all, right? Either there are a category of customers who would prefer server, there are a category of customers who would prefer Azure, and there are also a category of customers who would prefer a hybrid model. And at the end of the day, we want to take care of each of these categories of customers, right? And that's exactly what we want to do. And how will this talk meet all of these requirements? One, BizTalk server will have an update on-premise. We will be able to upgrade the BizTalk app to the latest MS platform. This ties back to the point where I mentioned about being up-to-date with the other versions of Microsoft technologies that are available. Improved reach in terms of B2B customers. I'll talk about it in detail in the next few slides as to what are the set of protocols and standards that we are updating. And better performance and manageability. Again, a whole bunch of improvements around how best you can visualize an application dependency, how can you better manage a BizTalk solution. BizTalk on IaaS. So essentially, if BizTalk were, the whole server solution could be hosted as an Azure VM, how would you do it? And the scenario, again, here was to eliminate hardware procurement times and in terms of reduce the time and cost to set up the environment, right? So this ties back to the point earlier that the customer wants to focus on the business side of things, not on how do I set up, install BizTalk in my data center environment. And finally, there are a whole bunch of past scenarios that we want to enable on BizTalk with EAI and EDI. There are a bunch of couple of demos on each of these. Especially when it comes to EDI, you would want to think of reducing the onboarding cost, right? At the end of the day, again, goes back to the point that you want to look at the business side of the problem and say, right, as an ISV, I probably onboard like 2,000 suppliers, and every time I onboard a supplier, I probably incur an overhead cost of picking up the phone, getting their details, filling it in my system, and then onboarding the partner, and then configuring my solution. Is there a way that I can reduce that cost? Is there a way that I already have a bunch of schemas and transforms that I've defined? They're already running, especially when it comes to B2B maps. They're fairly complex, and I don't want to reinvest the time when I move to Azure. Is there a way that I can reuse those artifacts? And like I mentioned, is there a configuration-driven approach rather than more of a, putting each of these building blocks together? Can I just do a few clicks and have my end-to-end integration pattern working? I'd like to stop here and take a few questions and see if there are any questions or concerns at this point. Any questions? Okay. Okay, the question is, are there any base core engine features that we are changing in the BizTalk on-premise platform? So we are adding a bunch of EDI improvements that is essentially touching the EDI pipelines and the messaging platform. And we are also introducing support for service bus connectivity. So in terms of how you connect your BizTalk on-premises into service bus, so there's a bunch of messaging improvements we are doing there as well. Those are the two that I can think of. As we go in more detail towards the server changes, I'll have a few other improvements that I'll highlight. Any other questions? Okay, so let's move on. I'd like to keep it interactive, so if there are any questions as we progress along, feel free to just raise your hand and we can have a Q&A. Right. And like I mentioned earlier, we'll ensure that all of these are working together. So all of these refers to BizTalk server on-premise, the BizTalk server running in the VM role in Azure, and also BizTalk running in the PaaS native form for both EA and EDI. Okay, let's move on to the first section, which is BizTalk server on-premises. So what are the feature enhancements that we're doing for the BizTalk server on-premise? The first one is the platform update. We will ensure that BizTalk server 2010 R2 is supported on Visual Studio 2012, Windows 8, the server platform, SQL Server 2012, which is already, I believe, an RTM, Office 15, and System Center 2012, which means you can take your MOM packs that you have and use them with System Center 2012 to manage BTS 2010 R2. Two, we are introducing a whole bunch of enhancements in terms of the standard support in B2B. So if you take a look at it, somewhere around BizTalk 2006 R2 was when we supported X12 standards up to 5030, and Edifact was still D05B, right? What we have done is move the needle to the latest and greatest of what is available from the standards body, and X12 would support up to 6030. And if there are folks who are thinking about, hey, where is 6040 in the picture, that should be a fairly simple ask. We can discuss offline if that's something that you would need. And Edifact, whole bunch of standards all the way from D06 to D10B, bringing Edifact standards to the latest. HL7, we are introducing support for 2.5.1, which is more of a minor update, and we are also introducing support for 2.6. Again, if there are those of you in the audience who feel that there are other versions like 2.7, for example, we can always discuss that offline and see the requirement around that. And finally, in the financial sector, the Swift message pack, we will include the 2012 message pack, which actually goes out this year as part of the B2B update in the stock version. And finally, a whole bunch of improvements around performance. I'd like to highlight each of these. The first one is the order send port, the OSP scenarios. So the way OSP was designed is when you had multiple order send ports, the performance was, and you were to send a message that were to be fanned out to each of these. The way it was designed was not optimal in terms of how the performance characteristics of the subscription would be, and we are trying to make some engineering improvements around that to make it work faster. In terms of dynamic send ports, today have a host handler, default host handler that gets associated, and you cannot change that default host handler. And what we have done is provided a configuration where you can actually change the host handler for a dynamic send port. And you can also use that in ESB scenarios to have better improvements. MLLP, again, this is more of the HL7 ACK, the way HL7 ACKs are handled in BizTalk. Traditionally, whenever you get a message, the message goes through our adapter pipeline and lands all the way in the message box. And at some point, we generate a HL7 ACK back. And the second message cannot come in as long as the ACK goes out, the entire round trip of the ACK goes out through the port to the application. So this was pretty much serialized, and the way you would optimize was to tweak the throttling settings in throttling settings of the BizTalk host, so you get to pull SQL faster and faster, right? What we did, and there's a cap to how frequently you could do that. So this engineering improvement is more around ensuring that we deliver the ACK at the same time we are not tied to the bottleneck of pushing this message to the message box, waiting for it, to get an ACK and all the way send it back to the system, especially in a two-way MLLP receive scenarios. I believe the performance was like 5x from where it was in BizTalk Server 2010. So it's a huge improvement, and it's actually, the ask came from the one of the largest enterprise healthcare companies, and we are now able to match and even exceed some of the performance that the other industry adapters do today. We are also investing in a whole lot of enhancements in the host integration services, the HIS, related to the DB2 connectivity in terms of the schema performance and how client transactions are handled through the DB2 connectivity. Any questions on the BizTalk Server feature enhancements? Okay, question. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question. Is it? Right. Right now, the mapper in BizTalk supports XSLT 1.0. So the way it's lined up is we would need support from .NET framework, which also supports 1.0 at this point. And so once we get the .NET support, we would look at building 2.0. Yeah. Right. So, okay, that's coming up in the next slide. The answer is yes. So the question was just for the audience and the recording, is Microsoft investing in the ESB toolkit? And the answer is yes. Okay, so let's move on. So the list of R2 improvements, again, the one around better manageability. So this one came as a feedback from our customers, right? So when you look at the artifacts, the orchestrations, adapters, ports, pipelines, whole bunch of components, at the end of the day, you want to see, hey, how is all of these tied together? If I were to delete it, what happens, right? You would want to see how are all these different artifacts tied together, and we are investing in coming up with more as a dependency viewer, which will be integrated as part of the admin console, so you can see how the different artifacts are tied up. The second goes back to the gentleman's question. ESB toolkit that is actually out there today will be part of the BizTalk setup and product. So the whole integration that was now out of the box, you would install it outside. ESB is now being integrated into the BizTalk media, and it will ship and be supported as part of our platform. And in terms of HIS, administration of HIS will be done, it's being more made better by using a set of configuration XMLs. And finally, a whole bunch of improvements, again, in terms of the improved connectivity, and this was the section that I was mentioning earlier that this wasn't part of the earlier announcement when we made about BizTalk Server 2010 R2. So the first one, we will consume REST services directly in BizTalk. Again, this was a huge ask from our BizTalk customers, and supporting REST services was, I think, the number one ask when it came to, hey, what's the next feature that you would want to be supported in BizTalk, right? Today, we support consumption of REST services. We are thinking about how it would, what it would mean in terms of exposing a bunch of services in the form of REST from BizTalk as well. So the second part is still under investigation, but the first part is part of the product in 2010 R2. In fact, if you sign up for the tab, you should be able to see that feature light up. Simplified SharePoint integration experience. Right? So the way the SharePoint integration worked in 2010 was you would have to install an agent on each of the farms where you wanted BizTalk and SharePoint to talk to each other. So when it came to a large farms, right, you had SharePoint distributed across multiple servers. In some sense, it was challenging to go install that each time and maintain that version in SharePoint. So what we have done is we have done away with that design and moved to more of using the SharePoint client libraries. So now within BizTalk, you can actually interact with SharePoint with actually installing each of those agents in the SharePoint farms. We've also made some improvements to the adapters. The SMTP adapter Suppose you would want to send an email to multiple recipients, right? Now you could have configuration parameters where now you can send multiple emails as part of the adapter configuration. The next big thing is connectivity to the service bus items. So service bus entities like relays, queues, and topics, you can actually connect to them from within WizTalk. I'll just talk about it in the demo, but it's as simple as you will have a service bus adapter in some sense. So when you create a port, you can pretty much specify what adapter you want. And for relays, you have, we support TCP relay and the HTTP relay. For queues and topics, we have the SB messaging adapter. You can pretty much use these adapters and directly connect to the service bus entities running on cloud. In terms of HIS, we are also improving the DB2 connectivity with SQL Server, essentially ensuring that DB2 and SQL can talk to each other in terms of the HIS scenarios. And we are also introducing SQL connectivity to Informix. If I'm right, earlier you would configure a linked server from SQL. From SQL you would connect to Informix, and then from Informix then you would try to integrate it with BizTalk. Now you'll have SQL Server connectivity to Informix with this improvement. And finally, the CICS IBM transaction server, you'll have a HTTP client connectivity to Windows. Question? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Correct. So there are actually three parts to it, right? One is obviously ensuring that the setup itself is part of the BizTalk installation. So in terms of support, it is part of the BizTalk, and you don't have to look at it as a separate product. The second level of integration, in my opinion, is ensuring that we have the latest version of the platform support itself, right? You'll have ESB toolkit, then there's a dependency on enterprise library, then there's a version of BizTalk. So how do you ensure that you are latest and ensure you don't muddle with other applications that use the enterprise library? Second set of integration. The third set of integration is what you call out. Hey, how can you make the experience seamless because the ESB portal and the bunch of components is touching across end components? Can you ensure that has a tight integration? At this point, what we are committing to is level one in some sense. We understand it's a journey. We have to move to level three, but that's something that we are looking at, but it's not committed at this point. Any other questions? Okay, so let's move on. We'll move on to the second part of the presentation, which is on hosting the BizTalk server in the Windows Azure VM role. Here, the use case is straightforward, right? We touched upon this in the earlier slides. The key benefit is you want to eliminate the whole lead time in procuring a hardware, ensuring it meets what BizTalk, the latest version of BizTalk requires, ensuring that you set up that environment, you maintain that environment. And in fact, installing and configuring BizTalk is like one of the challenges that you would incur when it comes to, starting from scratch and all the way getting it to a point where you have a solution up and running, right? So is there a way that you can reduce that configuration and setup time? So what we are saying is the experience will be as seamless as going to the Azure portal, doing a bunch of clicks, selecting the type of BizTalk server you want, selecting the topology, and have that deployed on Azure and have it running in a few minutes, right? So this eliminates a lot of configuration challenges when it comes to getting a BizTalk server up and running. A good example is when we talk to enterprise customers, one of the use cases they mention is when you're running a test or a dev project, right? Typically, you would need a BizTalk server for anywhere between 3 to 6 months, right? And that would be for project one. And once that project gets completed, you would obviously want to do away with that BizTalk configuration. And for the next 3 or 6 months, you would want another BizTalk configuration. Now, you are actually incurring that cost each time you want to go deploy, install, procure hardware, all of these, right? So can I eliminate that and have that available on the Azure environment in running in a VM role, right? So this slide just talks about the whole process in more detail. So the box on your left is the customer data center, the one that you already have today with your own Active Directory configuration. So what you have on the right is the Azure data center, and the thin white line somewhere in the middle, mark zero, is the extension of your ADFS into the Azure environment. So we are using a technology called Brooklyn, codename Brooklyn, where you can extend your on-premise connectivity, and pretty much your VMs that are running on Azure are addressable in the same way as those of your on-premise environment, right? So in terms of quick steps, so step one, you would just go into Azure portal. You would just say, I want to create a new VM. You'd select BizTalk, and then you would choose the appropriate server topology. And this server image that we are going to have at an IAS is the same server that we'll ship as part of the on-premise platform. It is going to be BizTalk Server 2010R2. So you'll get all the set of capabilities that are here on the IAS environment, right? And you would select the topology, and right now the thinking is that we would support two topologies. One is more of a dev environment, which is everything put in a box, right? I'll have BizTalk, I'll have Visual Studio, I'll have SQL Server, all of it put in as a single VM, and I want it to support my dev scenarios. I'm not going to do a multi-node scenario with different SQL and different BizTalk, multiple host instances. The second scenario is more of a test scenario where you'll have a multi-node topology. You can install SQL Server on one of the VMs. You can have your host instances running on different VMs. You can create a multi-node topology and have it provisioned through Azure. And once provisioned, you can log in, and it will pretty much be configured. The BizTalk admin configuration, all of the options. So here are the timelines. Again, where we are is in the first box. July, sometime around July is when we are planning to do our first public CTP. Again, in October, we are planning to go to the beta mode, and RTM is, like I mentioned, Windows 8 plus 6 months. So where we are right now is we have opened up the TAP registrations for the upcoming CTP. So feel free to just sign up. The URL is towards the end of the deck. Feel free to sign up. And pretty much every week we look at the set of customers who are signing up for the TAP, doing a screening, and getting back to them and ensuring that they get to try out the latest bits. Blake, question? Yes. Right, that's Windows 8 Server. So as you can see, it's pretty much a very packed schedule, and for the set of improvements that we're doing, it's pretty aggressive, right? So this is, we're just doing on-premise, and there are a bunch of improvements for the VM, and in a few next slides, I'll also talk about the past scenarios. Any questions at this point? Yeah. Sorry? Okay, so the licensing question is open at the moment. So we're thinking about different models, if it's going to be a pay-per-use or if it's going to be upfront licensing. All those are valid options we are considering. If you have feedback on any particular approach, feel free to get back to me. My email alias is in the slide. So Windows 8 Server is Windows Server 2012. Okay. So we want to ensure that it's aligned to the latest version of Windows as well. So, again, I need to confirm on what their branding is, but if it's Windows Server 2012, it will be aligned to that. Any other questions? I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? Is it about the VM size or?
The VM access to the SQL
Oh, okay. So in terms of the IIS scenario, the SQL Server is pretty much running on the VM. If you consider a DevBox scenario, the SQL Server is just running on-premise, and you can remote into that VM just like any other virtual machine. So you pretty much have access to all of the SQL Server technologies and tools that they have to offer. Even in my demo, you can see that I log into the Azure IIS VM with BizTalk, and pretty much everything is available for SQL. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on. So we'll talk about BizTalk Pass, the third part of the session. So what we're doing here is providing a native PaaS platform. We call it the bridge. The EAI bridge essentially is intended to reduce the impedance mismatch as a message comes in and goes out, right? So the bridge itself is divided into a set of stages, and each stage has a particular function. For example, it can remove the impedance mismatch. You can have a schema validation stage. You can have transformation. In this case, we have a new engine in the PaaS scenario. It's a TRFM engine. Just a quick 2 minute. The engine in the long term is intended to support not just XSD, XML to XML scenarios, but we're planning to target any to any messaging, right? You can take two C# objects and try to do a transform in between. So more the newer engine is aligned towards the longer term story. What we are also ensuring that we don't leave behind the current BTM. So the bunch of migration tools that we support, where you can take your BTM and get it converted to TRFM. I think if you go to btmmigration.codeplex.com, you can actually get that tool for the migration. And we plan to update it as we improve on the TRFM support. A whole bunch of support for custom code, where you can plug in your own custom pipeline components. Message enrichment, if there are certain properties that are of interest to you in your routing scenarios, or in terms of grouping different messages together, and a whole bunch of connectivity in terms of connecting to the LOB on-premise. Goes back to the earlier point I mentioned where customers do want to have their LOB running on-premise, but certain scenarios can run the EAI bridges on cloud. Typically, there are two broad categories, right? It's an enterprise scenario where you have a greenfield application. You want to quickly rig up an application running on cloud with a bunch of clicks. Or it's more of an ISV scenario where you're trying to integrate, let's say, Salesforce.com, and you're trying to message it to SAP or a SQL Server running on-premise, right? So the top boxes just indicate where the message is coming from. The bottom boxes where the message goes to, like, for example, the queue topic can go to another service or LOB on-premise, right? So what I have is a quick demo of a scenario. It's a fairly busy slide, but the top takeaway is this is an internal application that we use back in our IT where it's an incident management system where an incident as in a request can come from multiple sources, right? It can come from phone. The partner may already have a file with the request. It's a flat file. It may be an XML file, and it might come via FTP. It's a different transport. And all of it converge to a bridge, an EAI bridge that's running on cloud. And what we do is we take up that message, figure out the format, if it's a flat file, is it an XML, and let it pass through transform, convert it into a canonical message, and finally hand it over to the LOB transformation, and the LOB relay will push that message into the on-premise system, SQL. And now our backend IT can look at the incident that's come into their SQL Server using their UI and then continue the processing, right? So let's quickly take a look at how this system would be configured in the new environment today with EAI. By the way, the EAI bits are available as, if you search for Service Bus EAI and EDI, the April 2012 CTP has the SDK bits that you can install to download the bits. So once you download the bits and install, what you'll have is, as a developer, you'll have an integration with Visual Studio. What you can do is go to File, New Project, And you can see that there is an EAI project listed, and you can configure this EAI application. Click OK. So what I'm trying to do is three things. Take a message from FTP, transform it to my LOB, push the message to SQL, right? So the first two components are actually running on cloud, and the SQL server to where the message goes through is actually running on my laptop at the moment, right? So what I have done is I have a SQL server. It has a database incident management demo with incidents. It's a fairly simple table, right, with a bunch of product ask and the customer ask flattened into just one row in a table, right? So at the moment, there are no rows, right? So I'm going back to Visual Studio, and you can see that what I have done is I have configured my Service Bus Connect. So this is a feature that you'll get from the Server Explorer, the one on the top left. So all you have to do is install the SDK, and you'll have a management service running in IIS that exposes these calls, and all you need to do is say add server and give the URL with the management service, and you'll have that connected. It supports both HTTP and HTTPS. I go to LOB types. These are the five different LOB types we support today in Azure. I go to SQL and say add SQL target. What I'm trying to do now is expose my LOB as a relay endpoint on the cloud. I get a wizard. So this is my local system. I'm using the default instance. And the catalog is what I showed here. Catalog is incident management demo. So I believe it's case sensitive, depending on the collation I'm using in SQL. So I'm going to use Windows credentials to connect to SQL. Click Next. If the connection was successful, you should be able to see the incident table that you're seeing here. I open it up, and it shows me what are all the operations you want to expose as an Azure service. So I click just Insert, because I'm trying to insert from the cloud into my SQL DB. And I click Next. So then there is a runtime credentials, right? When a message comes in, how do you want to ensure that message has access to get into your SQL database? I'll give it Windows credentials. May not be the best option, but I'll give it anyway. So let me configure my Active Directory credentials that can connect to the system. Click Next. And now the final configuration is how do you want to expose it in Azure, right? So you would have to have namespace created on Azure, and all this requires is you need to key in that namespace information. So I have pre-created a namespace, so I'm just going to select one of those pre-created namespaces, and I can give a subpath, right? One namespace can have multiple LOBs configured, so I can create a subpath saying TechEd U1. So you can see that this is the URL that shows up, right? My namespace slash EU1 slash TechEd EU1 that I just keyed in, and just a confirmation. And within, like, just a jiffy, I actually have a relay endpoint that's set up on the cloud. So I go back to my SQL server, the configuration in Server Explorer, and you can see that this is the one that I configured recently, right? So I had a whole bunch of things created before this demo. And all of these point to that same, these two point to the same table, and this is to another different table, right? And by default, it is an enabled state. So now that I have configured SQL, I need to go to the second part of the problem, lay these out in my configuration. So what I'll do is I'll go to Toolbox, the whole bunch of items on how I configure a bridge connected to a topic queue, a relay, and a source. So let me quickly configure an end-to-end application, right? So I need a bridge. I need FTP. I also need my Server Explorer. Notice how I just drag and drop directly from my Server Explorer and drop it. It says that the namespace should be the same, so I click on the surface and ensure the namespace is the same as the one I configured that LOBT to be running under. So now I drag and drop it here, and there I have it. Then I can click on connections, connect FTP to one-way bridge. So I'm receiving the message on FTP, and once I process the message in FTP bridge, I need to push the message to MySQL server, right? This is the Uber configuration, right? Now, what I need to do is just go fine-tune these settings. So I'll click on FTP, and I need to key in my username password of my FTP server. So let me do that quickly. So this is a public, demo. So that's URL. I have a user. I have and notice that by default SSL is enabled, and in this case I'm not using SSL, so I have to change 919 to 21. File mask, just take text files for now. And folder path, let me go to that folder. You can see that this is my FTP server. There's nothing in here. So let me copy the folder path where that message needs to be picked up from. Right? So I have my FTP configuration ready. Let me get my LOB configuration. So if I click on the arrow, it just says what messages need to be routed to my LOB. So I'll click on that. And route filter condition is match all, so I need to send all messages from my bridge to the LOB. And I also need to specify the route action. What should be the SOAP action header when the message comes from the bridge to the SQL server, right? So I go back to this server, and under operations, notice that it says there's an insert operation. This is the one that I configured during my visit. So all I need to do is set my route action. I say add. It's an expression. So this is the value of route action. So it should actually say what table that you're writing to, and it's an insert operation. And let me put that in a SOAP action. Right, done. So now I have configured pretty much the first and the last piece of the messaging solution. Now I need to configure my bridge. So what I need is two things. One, I need schema so I can validate the bridge. Two, I need to transform from that message format to the one MySQL can understand, right? So the way I get MySQL schemas is interesting, right? All I need to do is right-click here, and it says add schema to project. So it kind of generates the schemas that are supported for this particular relay endpoint. Click on that. It asks some standard naming convention. So I'll just say incident underscore, right? Everything will start, every schema will be configured using that. Use Windows credentials, click OK. And notice that it has added those three schemas, right? Whatever is supported by that relay endpoint. So I need a source message, so let me go add an existing item. I have that pre-created. It's a very simple XSD file, right? It's a source file, and I also have a XSD file. Let me also go ahead and add the transforms so that I get to configure the end-to-end solution. Because I generated my XSD with incident underscore, the first time I open my transform, it would complain. So all I need to do is just point it to the right schema. So I choose the source schema, which is incidents. And it's an insert, not a response, because it's one-way bridge. There you go, my transform lights up. It's a fairly simple source schema, right? You can see that the two nodes, customers and details, I flatten it out and push it on the target schema which MySQL requires. Similarly, incident source file to SQL. Configure the incidents XSD, insert. It's a fairly simple schema, transform again. But here what I have is I have a MapEach construct. Again, this is not part of the BTM, which is an enhancement we did here. It allows you to group the set of all incoming to outgoing using this scoping. So I have my bridge configured. So I go back to my original flow. I double click on my bridge. I need to say what are the incoming message types. So that all these smaller boxes are the different stages of the bridge, right? So I get to validate, enrich, transform, and again, promote after a transform, another enrich. I can enable or disable each stage through the properties window. click on add message types. Let me say it is source flat file incoming type. I can also have a XML incoming type. And for both these schemas, I have validation turned on. I'll go to transforms. In the properties, I need to choose. So whatever is there in my solution explorer and matches the incoming message types are listed here. So let me go ahead and select both these transforms. Click OK. Save the file and come back. So I'm pretty much done with the EAI configuration. I'll build it. You see an error that's specific to my laptop configuration. So let me... Yeah. You should be able to build that project directly. So let me go ahead and open that solution. I think it was 13. Yeah. Right. So okay. So I need to close all my Visual Studio instances actually to make it work. It's hardly going to take. Okay, so I should be having 13 here. Okay, so there you see, build succeeded, and output window says that zero failed. And all. So the next step is to actually go ahead and deploy. So what will happen is all you need to key in is now give your credentials of your Azure namespace, because this bridge is going to be running on Azure. And you will have the bridge deployed. Because this is going to take about 5-10 minutes, what I have is a pre-created bridge configuration. Let me go ahead and open this one. This is the same project. It's just that I have deployed this configuration. If you go to click on the bridge, this is the runtime URL. So you can actually open up browser and click on the namespace, and it says an error message because that service bus expects a token as part of the request, and that's not in this configuration. So I know that the endpoint is working. So all I have to do is drop a message into my FTP folder, and again, this is empty, and the message should come up. So let me go ahead and copy a message. I'll copy flat file and XML. If you look at my FTP source configuration, the file mask is only star.txt, so it's going to drop, it's going to pick up only the text file. This is actually a live demo, so I'm pasting this file on some FTP file that's running on Azure. This FTP is running outside in a different domain, and what will happen is FTP adapter that's running on Azure has a poll interval, so that's going to look at, the default poll interval is 60 seconds. So it's going to look at this message, pull the message out. So at some point, this message will go away. So it'll go through the pipeline. It'll go process, get transformed, get into the LOB format, push into the relay endpoint. Now if I come back to SQL, there you go. So you have the two queries, two incidents that were actually added to my on-premise system after the message actually went on cloud. So right now it's an internal parameter. We don't expose the FTP poll interval, but we plan to do that in the future release. Right now it's defaulted to 60 seconds. Any questions on this demo? Okay, yeah. Right, so good question. So we do have tracking support in the bridge. So if you go click on the bridge surface and you click on properties here, you have track properties. So here actually you can say track the flow of data. And what it does is there is a store that we maintain, and it exposes a REST interface. So you can actually see where in the pipeline and what is the processing that's being done. So you can actually pull data from this. Any other questions? Okay, so let's go back to the deck. So this is the scenario that we saw where the messaging is being taken from the client all the way to the on-premise LOB. The second part is the EDI service. Again, this is a PaaS service that's running on Azure. The scenario is fairly straightforward, right? There are two partners in different domains, and there's a bridge that's trying to reduce the impedance mismatch between the two. One could do non-EDI. They could do XML, even actually custom formats like QuickBooks or PDF. The other partner might just be doing EDI for, order processing scenarios, for example. Like, think of it as a supplier-retailer scenario. The retailer is someone like Walmart. They enforce X12, AS2, and there is an ISV or an enterprise who manages the EDI solution to and connects to the service bus queue topic bridge or even sends a message to an on-premise endpoint. The interesting part is the on-premise system can actually be BizTalk. BizTalk server on-premise, right? So you can actually talk to your partner using whatever AS2, FTP, HTTP protocols, pass the message, create your agreements, transformation, processing, do the hybrid connectivity and all of those, and actually push the message to, let's say in the demo case, I'll be pushing the message to a queue, and the queue can actually be pulled. The message can be pulled and processed by BizTalk server. So you can actually have a hybrid story. With both the PaaS and the server on-premise systems. So the scenario in this case is fairly simple. You have two partners at the bottom of your slide, Northwind and Contoso. Northwind is, so Contoso runs, actually I think the text should be flipped. It's Contoso which is running the EDI app. Contoso is the partner that you're talking to. Contoso will send you a purchase order message, an RFQ, EDI 840 message. The message passes through and comes to a bridge that's running on the cloud. It's a flat file EDI 4010 840. It goes through the bridge, gets transformed into an XML. And what we do is we push that message into a service bus queue. And like I said, the order management system is actually a BizTalk server on-premise system. Pulls the message, so we have the service bus messaging adapter, which can talk to Azure queues, pick up the message, run it through an orchestration, do the business logic on-premise, and then forward the message to SQL Server. So that's the second demo we'll be looking at. Everyone clear with the scenario? Okay. So let me go back to my demo machine. I don't need this. So let me first quickly launch the portal, right? So this is the EDI portal. Like I said, in an EAI scenario, I started with Visual Studio because it's my developer experience. When it comes to EDI, it's more of an operator-driven experience. All I have is the portal. With a set of few clicks, I have my agreement, and the pipeline gets automatically deployed underlying, right? So how many of you have used the admin console partner-based agreement-based management in BizTalk? Okay, very few. So it's fairly intensive, right, in terms of the amount of data you need to fill in. Unless you know the intricacies of the protocol, it would be hard to configure each of those settings and have EDI up and running. So let's see how it happens in the newer world, right? All I have is I need to know who my partners are. Click on Add Partner. And I just key in the name of the partner. And say if it's managed or not. Manage if the person who's being hosting the bridges. Click save. It takes a couple of minutes, and I have my partner created, right? So in the demo scenario, I have Northwind and Contoso as my two partners. I click on agreements. And this is the agreement between the two partners, right? Contoso and Northwind. So I click on Create Agreement, create a name of the agreement. It generate a description. It's not mandatory. So select Northwind as my partner. He's the one I am running the pipeline for. Click on Contiso and click on Qualifier. Again, these are specific to EDI saying, hey, what should be the identifier that's part of that message? So let's call it Northwind. It's any text. So because it's a it's mutually defined, I can. This is a field in the message, so I can give pretty much a custom field. I can enable tracking. I can also enable archiving. Archiving is now natively supported as part of the bridge. I'll click on archiving and tracking, click continue. And I get to define my send settings and receive settings. If I were to receive a message from my partner, what should I do before I process? And similarly, before I'm sending a message to my partner, what are the end things that I do? So it's fairly intuitive, right? So receive settings, I receive it on some transport from my partner, have a protocol where I go manipulate my EDI settings, transform, and then route the message, right? So this is the URL. Let's assume that this is the URL that your partner says he's going to send messages on, right? You gave this URL, let's say, or email. It's pre-generated because this is hosted on Azure. It's HTTP, FTP, AS2. In this case, I'll choose HTTP. Protocol, all I need is just two things. So for the folks who have already configured this using the admin console, none of the settings are exposed. They are here if you want to configure the advanced settings. But by default, all you need is I am sending an EDI 840 message, and it tells you what standard or what format that you already selected. Right? I go to transforms, click add. And this transform was, by the way, uploaded. This is the same transform that we saw in Visual Studio. So it was a TRFM file that I earlier uploaded. And I'm selecting that transform. Route, I need to actually route this to a queue. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to portal.appfabriclabs.com, clicking on service bus. And earlier I had created a namespace. And that namespace, I had also created a queue. So let me go ahead and add that queue. I think I have the name here. No? Okay, I'll have to wait. Oh, yeah, okay. So I go to my subscription. I have my test, and I have my queues. And, okay, this is the one that I'm going to use, queue order. Yeah, let me copy that so I get the naming right. If you want to add another queue, just click on queue and say new queue. You can always create a new queue running in your namespace. So I say route that message into a service bus queue, add that queue in there. And what happens if the message is failed? Push it to a suspend endpoint. This is another service you would be hosting, and if there's a in that namespace, and if there's a error, automatically messages would be sent to this endpoint. So that's my receive settings. Send settings. Someone pushes from premise into my inbound URI. I transform the message. I can also batch messages. EDI batching is fairly common for van scenarios, or you know, scenarios where you want to optimize on cost or size or even duration, where there is a small window where Walmart can accept messages over a weekend. So some of those can be configured through batching. And protocol, again, on the send side, all you need is schema. I'm just going to use the same receive side schema for the purpose of the demo. Transport, how are you sending the message to your partner? Let's say this is my partner URL. This is something that the partner will give you saying, hey, give me messages on this URL, right? And if that fails, do you suspend any message? Click on deploy. And in a matter of minutes, your agreement and the underlying bridge should be available to you. Notice that all I needed was schemas, URLs, maybe a couple of transforms. With just these three information, I can actually end up creating an agreement. And this is actually a live service. If you go to edi.appfabriclabs.com, you can actually have your own version of agreements and bridges configured. So if I go back, in the list of agreements, demo agreement is created, right? So for the purpose of this demo, I also deployed another agreement, X12 Northwind Contiso. So the receive URL is where you need to push a message, and the route is actually pushing it to the same queue orders EDI, right? So what I have is now this message is to be picked up by BizTalk from the queue, right? So we'll look at how BizTalk is being configured. So what I have is I have the Azure preview portal. And again, this is specific to the account that we are using. And what we have done is we've gone to virtual machines. Under images, we have a bunch of BizTalk images. And when we actually RTM, you would see BizTalk as a native image that we add for BizTalk Server 2010 R2. So we've gone ahead and deployed this VM instance, right? So there is a BizTalk TechHead NA VM that's running. So I'll remote into this. And goes back to the gentleman's question. Once I'm inside a VM, I pretty much, it isn't very different from my on-premise, right? I have my SQL Server, you know, the management studio, and my admin console, pretty much what I use in my on-premises environment. So what I have done is I have created a receive port called receive orders. It's mapped to a receive location. Let me double-click on that. And the new part is actually this, right? There is a SB messaging adapter that you can use to pull messages from queues and topics, right? So configure. What I've mentioned here is that queue orders EDI. So pick up a message from that queue orders EDI. I need to give the authentication credentials on, you know, what the issuer name and issuer key is this for accessing this. The way I got this information is from here. When I go to click on the namespace, there is an issuer key that you can view, and that's the one that I have keyed in my BizTalk server. Right? That's pretty much it. Now, my message is already coming into my send port. And once it's in my send port, you know, I can put pretty much, I can put an orchestration pipeline message box and do the whole shebang, right, in getting my application running end to end. Before I go further into the demo, I'll just touch upon the other two. You know, there is the basic HTTP, basic HTTP relay, and the net TCP relay that you would use for relay binding. And you'll also use the WCF, I don't see a web HTTP, right? So there's a web HTTP that you would use for consuming a REST service that I mentioned earlier, right? So I have this receive location, receive port created. What I have is orchestration, and let me click on the bindings. So the orchestration essentially picks up that receive port, maps it to a logical port 1, and on the outbound, it maps it to a logical WCF send port SQL adapter, right? So before I show, I mean, the orchestration is fairly simple. I don't want to go into the details, but all it does is takes in a message, checks in a bunch of parameters, uses those logical to physical bindings, just a simple check on what the order quantity is, and then pushes the message out on the send side, right? By the way, this is on Visual Studio 2012, right? It's not the older version of it. I'm actually using the latest and greatest bits. So on my send side, here's my WCF SQL binding. Nothing difficult. So what it does is it just uses a demo DB. You know, it uses the SOAP action as DBO sales order insert. And let's go to SQL and see where it is. Okay, we do have a bunch of messages running from, you know, as part of the dry run. So we do have, let's keep the counter at 14, right? So now we have the end-to-end setup. I'm going to push a message to my EDI pipeline, goes all the way, does the processing, pushes it to a service bus queue, picks it up from BizTalk, BizTalk send port, receive port, goes to an orchestration, BizTalk send port, goes to SQL, and you should see that running in my on-premises, right? So in order to push the message, which is my first step, I do have a small, like not so fancy, but I have a form-based application. Let me open that one. It's the RFQ sender, right? Remember, in my EDI agreement, I configured a 840 message. It's not fairly sophisticated, right? Let me click on RFQ creator. So what I'm doing is I have a 840 message, and I just parameterized I just parameterized sender and receiver so I can pass that from a UI, right? And in my app.config, I have specified the receive URL of my bridge, which can route it to the topic and given the namespace credentials. Control F5. I have the fancy app. So let me say the message is being sent by Contiso to Northwind. Let's say name, email ID. You're sending an RFQ today. Product item code is, let's say, 1209. And quantity ordered is 350. So the sender and receiver ID is what you had configured in your agreement. If you go to general settings, you can see you're sending as Contiso, so value is CO, and you're sending it to Northwind NW. It has to be in caps. So this is CO, and this is NW, submit RFQ. It'll go pack everything up and then push the flat file to the EDI pipeline. The EDI pipeline will process it. Let me go back to my BTS on-prem, F5, and hopefully it should arrive. In order to know that, hey, is the message arrived properly, like the gentleman's question in EAI, EDI offers a portal where I can go to my trading partner system, click on tracking, and this will go retrieve the track records for any-to-any partner communication. You can actually search on a specific filter criteria, you know, based on date or based on agreement or based on a partner saying, hey, show me only the list of messages. So in this case, notice that this is the message. This time is, again, you know, it's actually mapped to UTC. So let's say view the message. So sender is Contiso, receiver is Northwind. Yes, that's what I did. Whole bunch of logs. You can see what happened. No errors. You can download the message that was sent if required. The message was processed successfully. That's good. So it must have gone to the queue. And let's go to BizTalk. It was 14, right? So let's give it an F5. And there you go. That's the 15. Just for confirmation, that's the message that I sent a few minutes ago. So now you have an end-to-end system where I have actually processed the message from my partner to cloud to queue to on-premise BizTalk and to SQL Server. So at the end of the day, it's always a hybrid scenario, and you can make both PaaS, IaaS, and BizTalk Server work together. Question? Correct. So this is the same REST interface that I mentioned earlier. So this is also available in case you want to build an analytics on top of that. That will be available as a REST interface. Correct. Yes. Any other questions? Okay, yeah. I'm sorry, could you please repeat? Yes. So the question is, how about specializing the EDI schema? So the set of changes that you would do for the BizTalk server on-premise for customizing the schema, all of those are supported in the Azure part as well. So it's you can do customization the same way. Question? Yeah. Yeah. So are you saying, is it possible that I can convert the BizTalk BTM to TRFM? Yes, you can. And so that's the tool that I was mentioning earlier. If you go to btmmigration.codeplex.com, we have that sample tool available. We plan to improve it as we add more features. Any other questions? Okay, so let me quickly go back to the deck. So what we have, you know, and both the demos showcase this, is we want to be able to seamlessly connect with the Azure artifacts, exploit the functionality of Azure, the scalability. There's a way you need not worry about hardware, some of those with BizTalk. And we want to enable hybrid applications where there is on-premise and there is Azure, and there's a way you can connect the two together. So in the EAI, you saw that you're trying to connect from Azure into on-premise. And in the second demo, you saw that BizTalk was on-premise, and you're trying to pull messages from Azure, right? So both these on-premise to Azure is possible. Access to LOB from Azure, we already saw that in the demo. And ensure that you're able to use the artifacts, like the other question, be able to use your BTM and be able to use your TRFM. Is there a way that you can migrate? Or are there schemas that you've customized for BizTalk on-premise? Would they work on Azure? All of those would be supported. So again, the key takeaways, BizTalk Server IaaS will be releasing 6 months after Windows 8. We are committed to releasing server for years to come. We will enable new BizTalk-based scenarios with Azure as a PaaS, which is there will be native integration scenarios. And we'll ensure that the on-premise and the Azure story are pretty much tied together. And our ask is you bet on BizTalk. We will take your investments forward. Call to action, bet on BizTalk. That's the TAP URL. You can actually sign up for that right now. And we'll ensure that we'll go through your details. Just give us more information about your organization, the kind of BizTalk usage. So it's part of the survey, and we'll get to know the data. And that's my contact email address, karthikb@microsoft.com. You can reach out either after this presentation or shoot me a mail, and I'll make sure that your question gets answered. Please fill your evals. The bunch of resources, the feedback is essentially helps us, you know, go back and tailor our presentation or give you more details in a follow-up presentation. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation. Thanks a lot.